The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Right, so we've had a third of the season. Loads of positives, you have to say that. Top of the Champions League group, just 4 points off the Premier League leaders and progression in the League Cup. But of course, there is that little sting, the defeat against West Ham to atone for. And of course, it's a toughie next. Arsenal haven't lost in nine. We'll look at that, Stevie's appointment at Villa and where it leads, and your questions as well in a mailbag special on the Red Agenda. I'm Steve Hothersall. Today's Red Agenda has the wisdom of Simon Hughes and Tony Evans. Can't wait for this one. Let's kick it off, Si, with the fact that Liverpool were just a stone's throw away from a new record. They've gone 25 unbeaten. And then that performance at West Ham, and it left a little bit of a sour taste in the mouth, Si.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the manager afterwards was complaining about red cards that should have happened. I'd agree on the red card. I think that was a red card. I can't really understand why the VAR decided against that. I don't think it was a foul on the goalkeeper, though. But nevertheless, you know, it comes right at the start of the game, and I thought Liverpool's performance afterwards was poor. And for me, you know, that sort of outcome has been on its way for a little while. I think Liverpool performed very, very well in certain games and scored a lot of goals. When they've won well, but they've also dropped points in nearly half the league games. So it didn't come as much of a shock to me as maybe it has in other places, I would say. So Liverpool have got a lot to figure out, I think, because they're a bit too easy to play through at the moment. Teams are having far too many chances against them. It's not been the sort of league campaign that underpins the title success 2 years ago, where they won a lot of games by the odd goal, but they were always in control. And I don't feel that Liverpool are controlling many games this season, even when they've won impressively, that the control has not always been there. So that comes from the midfield, and I'm sure we'll talk about those problems in other parts of the show.
Tony, there was quite an extreme reaction to that defeat at West Ham. Was that because, I mean, Simon said he saw it coming, but was that because maybe en masse, you know, we saw some weaknesses within that Liverpool side and all of a sudden it was properly exposed?
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that there are areas where they're not as good as they were a couple of years ago, and that's, you know, completely natural because you do have a turnover of players. And also, people have worked out the way we play, you know, the approach that we take and the points of attack. So West Ham, Moyes did it really well. You know, he kept his midfield deep. He flooded the areas where the front three were there. And then when they broke, they bypassed the midfield. And the midfield isn't quite as mobile as it was in the title-winning year, because obviously, you know, the loss of Wijnaldum has been really, you know, it's had a negative effect in that area. So, yeah, there's lots there that Klopp needs to sort out, but they still create chances. And, you know, if you look at, say, Brighton, you know, so it's not as much with West Ham, but Brighton got a result at Anfield, but they had to ride the luck. They can still blow teams away. But Simon's right, they're not controlling games and they're not putting them away.
Right, we've already had a mention for Gini Wijnaldum, and we'll do questions later on, but one that came in was about Gini's, or the lack of Gini, and his influence on Liverpool's season. James says, Si, will the failure to replace Gini cost us the title this season? Is it a blunder by FSG?
I mean, Tony's right as well there that, you know, these players who served Liverpool so well 2-3 seasons ago are a bit older. And for me, Wijnaldum was integral to Liverpool's development as a team. He was able to plug a lot of the gaps, did a lot of the dirty work, which I think possibly if you watch the game on TV, you don't recognise his importance quite as much. I think the season they did win the league, I watched a lot of games from sort of pitch side level almost, and the amount of protection that he gave the defence was very important. And hey-ho, he departs and suddenly Liverpool are surrendering a lot of chances. But let's not forget they had a difficult season last season as well for all sorts of different reasons that we have previously documented. To say that they won't win the league because he hasn't been replaced, I don't think it's as simple as just replacing him, because he was a brilliant footballer who I would say is very difficult to replace. You know, they could have signed somebody who would have taken maybe 6 months to come and bed in, and we could be having the same discussion right now. I mean, my concern really is as I've said all along throughout this season, Steve, is the fact that they head into January without the two main centre-forwards, and there's a big drop-off in quality that Liverpool have at the disposal when they're not there. That's a bigger issue. I would say that could potentially be a bigger blunder, really, to allow the team to head into two successive Januaries, knowing that there was going to be absentees and potentially not do anything about it. It seems very strange to me. So when you assess Liverpool's possibilities, you've got to look at what they're up against as well. I mean, City are very good, but they don't have a centre forward, and I think it will cost them in certain games, as much as exciting as they've been to watch. You know, they have dropped points as well in games that you wouldn't expect. And Chelsea have as well at Burnley. So I don't think it's, at this moment in time, it's as clear as it maybe it has been in previous seasons, where the teams at the top have been excellent.
Yeah. Look, it's definitely not a crisis, is it? You might read some things that take you down that line, but it's not. Tony, was there ever a good time to suffer that defeat? And actually, look, you know, they've had the international break. They come back. It's Arsenal next. They're only 4 points off the league leaders. Is it necessarily not the worst time to actually have that little wake-up call?
Well, yeah, I mean, it gives them a chance to take stock. It gives Jürgen a chance to think about things. When you lessen the hurly-burly of, you know, sort of the results, the roller coaster of results, you know, it allows you to think rationally about the next game. And, you know, it's quite interesting what Simon said, because one of the things is, because I'm based in London and I see a lot of London clubs and other games. I don't see as many Liverpool games as Simon and, you know, and the boys and girls who you know, cover the game from Anfield. And, I, you know, what Simon was saying about City, I saw them at Tottenham the first game of the season. And really, they could have been 4-0 up after 15 minutes, but they didn't score. They didn't have the cutting edge that you'd expect. And as Simon said, they're missing a centre-forward, which will have a big impact on them. They've already dropped points by that. So everyone, there's swings and roundabouts everywhere. So I think, yeah, the fact that the midfield has changed, it's not as efficient as it was. And, I mean, I always think our midfield in particular was unusual. It wasn't a traditional midfield. You know, they got few goals from it. They didn't get up and down the pitch as much, because what they did is provide balance, as Simon said, screen the defence, especially Wijnaldum, and allowed us to attack from the wings. I mean, it was a very particular tactical approach that no one else in the league did, and people couldn't deal with it. But everyone's worked it out a little bit now, and they've lost a huge component in Wijnaldum in that midfield, and it's hard to get a player who'll come in and do exactly the same job. So that is going to be an issue. And again, the forward line, which often bails us out in games that are where we're not dominating, will be missing two of the most integral parts in January. So if we're not going to challenge for the league, it won't be just about Wijnaldum. It'll be about the sort of the team, the squad as a whole. However, everyone else has got weaknesses. Everyone else is going to suffer. So I don't think it's right to be negative about the possibilities, certainly not at this stage of the season, and certainly after the first defeat.
Liverpool have had some injuries, haven't they, Sav? If you look at the situation with the squad, and in part what Tony's saying there about that, you know, the changes in midfield, a lot of it's down to injury. We saw that early blow for Harvey Elliott. You've then got Firmino, Keita, Milner, Curtis Jones now as well. It seems a little bit of a relentless chain of injuries popping up for this side currently.
Yeah, you know, Andy Robertson, of course, pulled up, didn't he? Question marks whether he'll play against Arsenal. I feel it's sorry for Andy Robertson. I mean, he's been getting an awful lot of stick on social media over the last month or so. Obviously, he didn't perform to his best at West Ham, but I just think he's been an absolutely brilliant player for Liverpool, and it astounds me the way some people are willing to turn on players who've done so well. I think part of some of his problems this season has just been because he hasn't had much of a break. I mean, last season, Tsimikas was brought in to give him the chance of some rest. And Tsimikas got injured, which meant he had to play a lot of games throughout that Christmas period. And his form suffered as a result, and then didn't have much of a break in the summer. So it's no surprise he must be absolutely knackered. People forget as well, playing for this Liverpool team, it takes its toll on the body. It's not an easy team to play for. You've got to be so fit to go and play. And if you are fit, there's a lot of movement on that pitch, which increases the possibility of getting injured as well, I would say. So it's sort of a high-risk game that Liverpool play, and it explains really why Klopp gives so much attention to the medical staff, because they need to be at the top of their games to ensure that the players are available to be on the pitch. So I think there's a couple of reasons why that's been the case. I don't think it's necessarily just bad luck. I think it is the nature of the way Liverpool play. I think, you know, you've got to be really, really, really fit. You can't hit players that aren't quite at the fitness levels. I think it shows in the performances because of the way the team's set up. So as well, a lot of these players have sort of developed at Liverpool at the same time and reaching a certain age at the same time. So we've had these conversations before, haven't we, Steve, about sort of is it right to allow a team to get old together, and there's a constant need for recycling and making sure that you've got new players coming in to challenge them. That's why, again, it goes back to the point about the forward line. I was surprised that they didn't go for somebody in the summer, because I thought it would have given them, whoever the signed, would have given them a couple of months to sort of get up to speed with what was to come, and then play in January when Salah and Mane disappear. So for me, that seems like a lost opportunity. If there was players there available again, there's a lot of question marks on Liverpool's ability to go into the transfer market. I think it was reliant on selling some players. Have some of the players that they tried to sell being overvalued in a changing transfer market? I think that's a fair question.
Tony, Simon's written an article, No Margin for Error if Liverpool are to stay in the title hunt. And that looks at the challenges that Liverpool are going to face in January. So as he's mentioned there, obviously Mo and Sadio ending up in the African Cup of Nations. But even before then, we're looking at a December with 9 games in it. And I just mentioned those injuries. And you really are crossing your fingers that it doesn't get any worse.
Yeah. And I think the point Simon made there is one that a lot of people underestimate. I mean, one player was saying about when he arrived at Anfield that, you know, he thought he was fit and he thought he was, you know, he thought, oh, yeah, I'm a professional footballer in the Premier League, you know, I'm as fit as they come. And after like 3 months of being there, he was like, he thought, that's it, I want away. I don't want to be part of this. It's too relentless, physically and mentally. It was a struggle. And then there was a penny dropped. I'm like, wow, for the first time in my career, I feel like an athlete. And the positive side of that is you see them on the pitch, you see how they work and you see the movements and you think, oh, the effort they put in. The downside of it is that when you're that finely honed, you live a little bit on the edge fitness-wise. You know, you push yourself to the point, and I've talked to athletes across various disciplines about this over the years. You're so fit, you're almost, you know, you're making yourself sick. You know, you're right, you know, you leave yourself vulnerable to the slightest injury, and that's the downside of Klopp's approach, which, if that's the biggest downside, it's still a pretty good one. But the squad is thinner, perhaps, in certain areas than it should be. You know, we've talked at length over the last couple of years about replenishing from a position of strength when you win Champions Leagues and titles. That was always traditionally the Liverpool way to bring in, a player who you would look to get into the team, and that turnover of players and keep the freshness and the youth going. And we haven't quite done that as well as we have sometimes in the past. And the main thing Simon said, the drop-off of quality, particularly up front, once you lose Salah and Mane, you know, it is a huge drop-off. And all these factors will make it for a very difficult December and January, which, but on the other hand, you know, opponents are going to have similar problems. And everyone forgets, it's not just the Africa Cup of Nations in January. There are South American World Cup qualifiers that other people will be losing players to, and we will be as well. So I think January will be more difficult across the Premier League than we think. Luckily, there's the FA Cup in there, so it shouldn't be too dramatic. But yeah, I think we can expect a relentless period starting on Saturday.
After what happened last January and the lack of activity, Si, we know what the headlines are going to be about Liverpool this January, because there'll be an added focus on whether FSG go into the transfer market. Do you think they learnt a valuable lesson from last year? You know, and obviously everyone was crying out for this defensive cover, didn't happen until late, and then Ozan Kabak was brought in. Has the penny dropped in many ways, do you think, or will it be a similar sort of approach?
It depends whether they manage to find solutions, I suppose, Steve. I mean, if they don't, the argument will be, well, no, they haven't learned the lesson. I mean, sometimes I do wonder whether they almost have too much faith in the manager to get things right and perform miracles. You know, with the sad reality is, if you don't have Mohamed Salah, who is one of, if not the best players in the world at the moment, and if you don't have Sadio Mane, the two of them have scored the bulk of Liverpool's goals, you're going to find it very hard. And, you know, as much as a cult hero Divock Origi's become, is he going to be able to really deliver when it really matters and it's up to him? I mean, hopefully, maybe, we don't know. He's had so many, it's been so many points in his Liverpool career where you think he's done, and then suddenly he manages to go on a bit of a run and plays an important role. You know, like, let's not forget, he scored the season when Liverpool won the Champions League. I think, well, it was an own goal against Newcastle, but I think maybe he got credited with the goal he scored against Barcelona. He scored in the final. You know, we can do it in big games. I suppose what we need to look at in January is the fact that they've got three games, Liverpool. The three tricky games, one of them very difficult game, you know, Chelsea away. Going into an away game against Chelsea, given that they haven't beaten them at home from a point of advantage, having after Chelsea got the man sent off, I think that places extra emphasis on that game, particularly given that Chelsea are top of the league. So it's a game I would say Liverpool can't afford to lose. So going into that game potentially without your two best forwards is going to be hard. Despite saying what I've said, I don't think it's easy just to say, well, let's go and sign somebody who's going to replace the two players that I've already mentioned. I don't think it's as easy as that, but I think they could have maybe, again, done something a bit earlier, a preemptive strike by ensuring that they've got extra bodies available, because it'd be interesting to see what Jurgen Klopp does in December with Salah and Mane, given that he won't be those players won't be available to him in January as it stands. So in the past, Saturday is the point where Klopp, in his best seasons as Liverpool's manager, has started rotating the team. Obviously, you mentioned all the injuries that they've already got, Steve. That's going to become even harder to do that. So you just worry that you get to January, the players that haven't had enough rest, the players that are coming in have had to play more games than they normally would. And is there going to be enough freshness? Is there going to be enough drive in the team to get through that month, which is a month that, if you look at Klopp's records, it's his worst month by an absolute mile. He's failed to win in more than 50% of his games as Liverpool manager since he's been in charge in January. So it's a month that he does struggle. And a lot of those defeats have been in FA Cup matches and other domestic cup matches. But nevertheless, it doesn't look healthy. So for me, there are some worrying signs, I would say.
Yeah, transfers are already on the lips, aren't they? I know it's a month away. A couple more questions from the mailbag. Tony Lee says, what are the chances of a January midfield or forward signing? And Robert goes further than that. He says, will Liverpool ever spend over $50 million on a player without actually selling someone for a high fee under FSG? So what about those two different elements?
Well, I think it'd be highly unlikely that you could find a top quality midfield player or striker available at the right price in January. So I can't see that. And we saw, you know, at various times, and Michael Edwards has done a great job in some areas. The recruitment department's been brilliant. But we saw last January the absolute carnage at the end of it, where suddenly the buying centre earths, not because they're actually going to be useful and they're going to contribute to the team, but frankly, because it's a PR move to appease the fans, you know. It's and that was ridiculous. So I think one of the things that, dealing with Fenway Sports Group for a long time now and seeing the way they think, sometimes they think they're cleverer than the rest. They think they think they can do things a little bit more astutely, and they can cut corners that no one else has noticed there's a corner there. And they do that sort of thing, and sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes it's as simple as spend the money you can afford, the most money you can afford, on the best player available. So you buy Virgil van Dijk and you buy Alisson, and suddenly the landscape's different. Now, will they ever do that without selling a player? Well, no, because right from... Well, I say no. There is the possibility. I think if the player was the absolute right player for them, then they would. But in general, no, they're not going to do it unless they've decided this is a nailed-on cast-iron superstar who's going to make a massive contribution. And I don't see that January is going to be that situation. You don't buy, generally, top-class players in January. You know, you can say, yeah, but what about Van Dijk? But again, everyone forgets that they botched the Van Dijk transfer the previous summer. So it should have been done then. And, you know, it's so I can't see players that coming in January that you'll go, wow, this is brilliant. This is a transformative player and someone who'll help us to go on and win the league.
We've not even mentioned the world Arsenal yet. They're the next up, Si. If you'd followed the media narrative, you'd think Arsenal were having a crisis. But as I mentioned before, they're 9 unbeaten and they're only 2 points off Liverpool.
I watch Arsenal with interest. I remember 2 or 3 seasons ago, Unai Emery made a brilliant start as Arsenal manager. Came to Anfield and got a right old filleting. And that sort of signalled the end, really, for him almost. It's a fixture Arsenal have really struggled in for a number of years, dating back to sort of 2013-14 when Wenger brought Arsenal and Liverpool absolutely destroyed them. I think Arsenal were top of the league at that point in February-March time, do you remember? 5-1, was it? And since then, they performed so badly at Anfield. So I'm interested to see whether... I haven't seen as much of them. Maybe Tony has this season, whether there are signs of improvement. I mean, for me, the problem at Arsenal, a bit like Man United really, is it's not necessarily the team. I think it transcends the whole football club and the culture that exists there where, you know, from the point of ownership really. I think they're on the back foot all the time because the people who are running the club, for me, aren't really skilled at what they're doing or the top end of football ownership. So it seems like they jump from one idea to the next. But they have started the season well. In the games that I've seen, it does look like there's been improvements. But for all the reasons that we've just spoken about, this is where it gets really difficult now, December, January, because of the intensity of the games, the number of the games. I think the players at Arsenal are just about to be tested. And by the end of certainly by the end of December, we'll know a lot more about them, I think.
Yeah, you probably have seen a bit more, Tony. Youngish Arsenal side, but coming together.
Well, you know, the young players are great. You know, Saka and Smith Rowe, you know, it's hard not to be excited about them. But then on the other hand, you look at the defence, you know, you look at the midfields and you think, ooh, I'm not so sure about this. Reports of Arsenal's resurgence have been greatly overstated. They're not that good. And there's a fragility about the mentality. And there's an incoherence in their tactical play that we should be able to exploit and beat them. I don't think they're very good at all. You know, they got good results against Leicester. And you're like, whoa. But Brendan's teams go a bit up and down and you never know what you're going to get from them. They beat Villa, but Villa were in a real mess. You know, Crystal Palace was significantly better than them, and they got away with one there. And, you know, against Brighton, that was a bit drab. They're not that good. Sometimes, especially in the modern Premier League, we get unbeaten runs, and you go, wow, you know, this teams are such and such unbeaten runs. You know, we've had a few of them over the years, and they're absolutely underwhelming. And Arsenal's is one of them. And I'm like, an unbeaten run... that unbeaten run will come to an end at Anfield. That's where I'm betting. And you know, I might end up looking foolish on this. I reckon it's definitely they're gonna crash and burn at Anfield.
I love that. No one's noticed that they've gone 9 unbeaten. Absolutely brilliant. Right, let's head down the M6. We said we were going to talk about Steven Gerrard. He's in the Aston Villa hot seat now. There is a piece on The Athletic. Steven Gerrard and Christian Perslow, an unlikely alliance. Is that a case or not? Obviously, the conversation from the Liverpool perspective, Si, is he 3 years away from coming to Anfield? I certainly don't feel like that's an absolute nailed on certainty in any way, because he's still got so much to prove.
Yeah, and I think he knows that as well. I mean, I think there's risks in any move that he made, whether he stayed at Rangers or moved on to Villa. I think he needs to start well at Villa, because obviously it's fascinating for Liverpool supporters at the moment. I'm fascinated to see how he does. I think it's making the Premier League interesting in all sorts of different ways for me. So I think that he will need to start fast at Villa, because it's not like he's going to Villa and he's a player who's been adored by Villa fans in the way that, you know, he's adored by Liverpool fans. So I think that any excuses will run out pretty quickly. You know, that they're in a bad position. They've got better players than their position suggests. I think he can get them up the league. I think this season, if he stabilises the team, gets them into the top half, which is where they should be finishing, that'll be a good start. I think if he'd have stayed at Rangers, he could have plodded along for a number of years, but I do feel that he needed even more investment in the team to ensure that to give them a better chance in Europe, which is where he'd be judged as a potential Liverpool manager. I think he's got some great results in Europe, in the Europa League. Let's not forget, when he took over at Rangers, they were an absolute laughing stock. Rangers are one of the biggest clubs in Britain. They've been a laughing stock for a number of years for all sorts of different reasons. They couldn't beat a second-ranked team from Luxembourg. They got knocked out of the Europa League the season before he arrived. You know, they had no players. He turned them into a serious football team again. You know, well-organised football team, but with limitations. You know, they signed a lot of players that maybe Premier League clubs didn't want, players that even some Championship clubs weren't that fussed on. But he's made them a serious football team again, which needs to probably another cash investment to make sure that, or to give them a better chance of competing in the latter rounds of European competition. I think he knew that as well. I think that any manager is the same. I mean, Jurgen Klopp is a great football manager, but he also needed the funds to go and sign Virgil van Dijk and to go and sign Alisson Becker to give the team a better chance of winning, basically. I think without those two signings, that doesn't happen. What's happened for Liverpool doesn't necessarily happen. So it's still a player's game. What I'll be interested to see is, he's obviously gone in at Villa, a different sort of calibre of player, different sort of personalities, possibly slightly more difficult to manage. How he deals with that's going to be fascinating to see. But I think he knows that ultimately, if he doesn't do well at Villa, he'll probably be further away from the Liverpool job than he was if he'd stayed at Rangers and plodded along. So he needs to make a real success of this. I think he'll give absolutely everything to it. And if he could get Villa into Europe in the next two or three seasons, it's obviously a much, much higher competition in the Premier League. Let's not forget, Newcastle, obviously, in the next couple of years, I would think if they stay up this season, will become a serious contender for Europe just because of the supposed money that they've got. So it's becoming harder to do that. But I can't fail but be impressed by his courage, really. He, you know, is an absolute legend at Liverpool. In my view, one of the greatest, the greatest Liverpool modern player. He's put his neck on the block there. And he will ultimately want to come back to Liverpool. But again, he's risking his reputation, as Graeme Souness found out. And I can only admire that he has that courage and determination to try and get there. And I suspect deep down, you know, the thing that really hurts him still is that he never won the league with Liverpool. And if he were to come back to Anfield at some point in the future and somehow manage to deliver that as a manager, it'd be one of the great football stories, I think. So, yeah, really exciting, and I'm fascinated to see how he does with Villa, because I think they've got better players than the performances suggest this season. So there is room for improvement. The last thing that I'll say is, I think there's only two or three jobs that he could have taken in the Premier League that at this moment in time, in terms of realistically, would motivate him. I think if he'd have gone to, you know, trying to keep a team out of relegation, I don't think that really motivates him. He wants to manage a team and a club that's trying to push forward. I think Villa are one of those clubs, Leicester another, and obviously West Ham, I think, at the moment, they're a club that are showing that they're trying to do things that haven't been done at that club for a long time. So it's potentially, you know, a good job for him to take, but I don't think it's going to be without its challenges.
Yeah, it looks like a good platform. The path to Liverpool isn't going to be easy. And I think we know that actually Liverpool's owners, I mean, sentiment doesn't come into this, does it, Tony? We saw that with Kenny Dalglish or even Brendan Rodgers, that the name Steven Gerrard ultimately won't get him the job at the end of the day. It's what he does at Villa now.
Well, definitely. And, you know, you said, is he 3 years away? I'd say at this point he's three light years away. It's a long way. The potential for him to be Liverpool manager is even in Fenway Sports Group's minds. I don't think, because they came at the tail end of the captain's career at Anfield, and I don't think they see him quite as the legend that we do. That's one way I'd put it. So I think he's got to do a really good job there. I think it's going to be really difficult, because one of the things about him going to Ibrox was that it's difficult to bring players there, but his status actually made players who perhaps thought of themselves as better than going to Scotland and going to Rangers, I get a chance to play for Steven Gerrard. You know, it's like, I'll go there. I mean, I remember Kenny Dalglish telling me that when he was manager, when they were looking at young players, they get Steven to phone them and say, you know, it's come and play with me, because they all recognised him. They all wanted to play with him, wanted to be around him, because he's just this giant of the game. And that worked well at Rangers. People came and they, who might not necessarily have gone. That won't work at Villa, where you're dealing with a higher calibre of players who are going to be paid more, you know, sort of seasoned Premier League players, and you're against better opposition, better coaches, better sides. So it's going to be a difficult job, and he's going to work again with Christian Perslow, who, as everyone knows, is my favourite person in the entire world. At Anfield, Perslow promised an awful lot to a lot of people and did not come up with the goods. And despite that, Gerrard's gone back to him, and let's see whether he can. And obviously, he must have made assurances to his new manager. So let's see if Perslow can actually do it there. I mean, it struck me as really strange that Villa, they sacked Dean Smith after a poor run. But, you know, he'd done so well before. I thought it was a bit premature. It smacked of Perslow being desperate to get Gerrard in and to bring some star quality. Remember, this was the man who wanted Thierry Henry before Dean Smith. He loves his star names. He loves to mix with the elite of the game and sort of bask in their reflected glory. But you know what? It doesn't always work. And I think everyone wants to see Gerrard do well. We'd all love to see him do well. We'd all love to see him come back to Liverpool. I'm not entirely sure this is the best move, and I'm not entirely sure in his personality he's cut out to be the manager of a club where he's got so much emotional investment as he had in Anfield. I mean, he's a player. As a player, he would, you know, he always felt the weight of the world on his shoulders, and he was able to carry the team on many occasions. As a manager, it's very different. You know, carrying that burden is so, so different. But let's hope he does well.
Yes, a warning sign there from Tony. We hope he does well. Just a very quick thought on Gerrard bringing a team to Anfield early December. We've seen former players, managers come back to Anfield. Great receptions, Gerrard Houllier, etc., etc. This is different, isn't it?
Yes. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he reacts to it, because I remember when Gerard Houllier was Villa's manager and he returned to Anfield, and you know, he was clapping the cop more than he clapped the Villa fans, and I think he found himself on the back foot with their fan base quite quickly as a result of that. So I think he's going to have to pay respect to the job that he's doing. He's not here, you know, for some sort of to say hello to everybody again. He's going to have to make sure that he's Villa's manager that day and shows respect to the job that he's in. And I'm sure he will do that, of course. But yeah, it's going to be strange, I would say, because he's always said that he could never imagine playing against Liverpool. And that's one of the reasons why he turned down some of the European clubs that offered him contracts after his Liverpool days came to an end. So again, Tony touched on it there about the emotional side of it. He is a deeply emotional person. It's going to be interesting to see how he deals with that process. I mean, he'll be a couple of games in as Villa manager at that point. So if he started well, I'm sure he'll be relishing coming back to Anfield. If it's a difficult start for him, I think coming back to Anfield is probably the last thing that he needs.
Really can't wait for that match. Boys, fantastic. Tony Evans, thanks for coming on. Simon Hughes as well. Simon's done a great piece looking ahead to January. Loads more stuff on Liverpool on the site at the moment on The Athletic. Check it out. Thanks for listening to The Red Agenda. We're back after the weekend.